Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
On this computer, because I'll fill up my cloud pretty quickly if I do it on the cloud. But anyways, you're not supposed to watch this show this early. It hasn't aired in America from what I can tell.
Well, you know, I channeled every bit of last stunning power I had to open this forbidden door and I kind of slid in.
Yeah, it's called a VPN.
Well, they're not sponsoring the podcast, so we're not going to drop the name.
Yeah, well, and I think we're both using separate VPNs, but here in Canada, it's just Netflix, like without a VPN. When I saw this coming up on the calendar, Greg and I circled these 3 weeks knowing that this was going to be the only time these 3-hour SmackDowns were going to be good.
Well, you're probably right about that.
Because we got a great show out of this, and there's a lot of reasons, but I think we should probably start the podcast and then we'll go into what this actually was.
Casting sports entertainment, it's Brad, the Dad, and Father Greg, the Smack Daddies.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your SmackDown review for The Hub. I am Brad, the Dad, and riding shotgun with me is not my tag team partner, Greg Father Feltham. Greg is off on special assignment, so I, as you may have seen from my superhero trailers, called in the superhero from the South, the stunning one himself, Sean Burkhead. Come on down.
Say his name and he will appear. Because I believe in Sean Burkhead.
They love him in Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, even Nova Scotia.
They all believe in Sean Burkhead.
So, Burkhead, you got called in to be Greg's replacement on the matinee SmackDown.
Thank you, dear Lord, for letting Greg Fatlum disappear for a week and let me have a afternoon SmackDown. Thank you.
Yeah, like this is incredible. I don't ever want WWE to come back. Like people are like, if they went to Saudi Arabia, it'd be terrible. Yeah, maybe we don't get to watch them live, but we could have afternoon wrestling and watch it at our leisure on Netflix.
And I got to say, it was great to watch the Canadian version of Netflix and watch this live and no freaking commercials. I'm in heaven.
Oh, this is what SmackDown's like every week. And as you noticed, as you're watching the commercial breaks, if you're behind, you can skip ahead. And what's it matter? Like, it's not like you're missing anything in most of those commercial breaks.
No, and they have a countdown timer, so you know exactly when to get back.
Yeah, it's like you pull your phone out, hit a timer. It's like, oh, no, I need you to go use the bathroom. I want to grab a beverage. I got 3.5 minutes. And if you happen to be late, you just hit rewind and it goes right back to the beginning of the commercial. It's the best setup ever. Netflix is the best. Their player's beautiful. Everything's great. So, Sean, we're going to talk SmackDown, and then we're going to do Born Again. We're going to talk a little bit of Daredevil.
Exactly, because we need to, because I get it. Spoiler alerts, guys. This lives up to everything you want to see from the actual Netflix/Marvel Daredevil universe. They have done good fan service.
Well, and I don't know if this is well known, but I'm a huge comic head. So I've been reading the Daredevil comic for years, and this is following one of my favorite story arcs. So I'm I'm like looking up some of the nerdy things to talk about in a second, because this is a really good run of Daredevil. Not, even though it's called Born Again, it is not the Born Again run that we saw mostly in season three of Daredevil on Netflix, but, or now on Disney Plus, I guess.
Exactly. If you haven't had a chance to catch the original, go back, watch the original first before you break into the new Born Again series.
Oh yeah. And watch Defenders. It looks like we're going to get some pull-ins from all of those shows. I mean, we've already had some big comic book stuff. So without any further ado, Sean, let's talk about Barcelona, Spain, SmackDown. Sean, we saw something that I did not think we'd ever see. You can tell that there's been a major change in WWE because Randy Orton is smiling.
Would he be smiling if he were married to his wife? Randy did well, okay?
Okay, Sean, we've watched wrestling for years. Is this the first time we've seen his, like, his real wife on a regular episode of wrestling? She's been on, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, but she's not usually just hanging out, dude.
Honestly, I mean, this is the first time we actually seen his actual wife on WWE TV.
So for longtime fans who don't know what Sean and I are riffing on, usually an actor plays Randy Orton's wife in everything. So we've had, what, four versions of Randy Orton's wife on television, and now we finally get the real one?
Exactly. I guess we're in the proper prime universe for Randy Orton.
And his wife's just like, I'm going to go on the road, Randy. I've never really done a European tour. His back's going to give out one of these days, so I might as well get to try a European tour with Randy and the boys. And sure, why not? Why not go to have a lovely trip around Europe and Spain? So they're part of the people walking in. We got Mello, we got DIY, and finally Paul Heyman with the football, or as you guys would like to call it, soccer ball, and he just boots it. Paul Heyman, ladies and gentlemen, the greatest of all time.
So true, so true. And let's just get on with the show here, my friend.
How much did the crowd add to this? Because we're going to start the first segment with LA Knight cutting a promo. How much did this crowd set this place up for a fabulous night?
Oh, they did everything in their power to match Leon France. And I got to say, it's a tough decision. Do you like Leon France or do you like Barcelona?
I think we should be. This is where WrestleMania they used to do the post WrestleMania overseas tours. Forget it. Do the pre-tour. Not only do we get matinee episodes, the crowd makes this product feel way hotter than it actually. I mean, the community is hot, but not this hot.
Oh, trust me. I agree with you. I feel like this is the formula from now on. It's like on the road to WrestleMania, we make a major detour to Europe.
Speaking of a detour, recap one. LA Knight won the US title and he's now out. The crowd's done their thing. He is super excited about having the title. The crowd is losing their mind. He talks about this being history making, the first SmackDown in Barcelona. He does his LA Knight. Yeah, the crowd is just on fire. Out comes Jimmy Uso. Jimmy looks like he wants to not congratulate, but he wants an opportunity at that title. Solo comes out and says, if anyone deserves a title at this U.S., an opportunity at this U.S. title, he's not pointing at himself. He's pointing at Jacob Fatu. This turns into a beatdown. Get these hands. Braun Strowman comes wind sprinting from the back. And look, Sean, there's six. Three from what used to be called the New Bloodline. Three random mid-carders without programs. Holla, holla, playa. It's time for a six-man tag.
Okay, look, we went through two wrestling tropes in this opening segment. The first one being, I was thinking, oh, hey, this is how we introduce the new contender for LA Knight. Then I started seeing the number of people we have, and I'm like going, Teddy Long special. Come on down, Nick Aulis.
Right, and then some combination of a four-way will determine our number one contender, or maybe they'll just take all six of these guys and ram them into a match at WrestleMania and put the U.S. title on a ladder or on a pole or, you know, scramble something. Because that's going to be the biggest challenge for this year's WrestleMania, is to get everybody on.
Well, you do have two nights, my friends. Two nights. Two.
two nights over, like, thank goodness that that is happening over Easter weekend, because we're all going to need Easter Monday to recover.
All right, got it. Schedule off. I'm already set. Let's go.
So Sick Van Tag, as we alluded to, is Jacob Fatu, Tama Tonga, and Solo Sikoa versus LA Knight, Jimmy Uso, and Braun Strowman. The first part of this match, they're isolating Jimmy. He's getting beat down. The commentary is talking about how he is the least successful member of his family. LA Knight gets the hot tag. He does his LA Knight stuff, including an elbow, but he gets distracted by the Bloodline. Flatliner by Jacob. And then we get another commercial. This time, Solo's hitting.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
The hip attacks, finally the hot tag. Braun Strowman runs wild. He's beating up Tama Tonga. He knocks everybody to the outside. He does his Strowman Express, running around the ring like a crazy person. And then finally, we get dive. LA Knight does his sort of dive where he goes feet first through the ropes. Jimmy hits a suicide dive. This leaves Braun in the ring. He drops Tama Tonga 1, 2, 3. But before we can celebrate, Samoan Spike takes out the big man. And LA Knight fights Solo off to the back. Jimmy's been taken out. And this leads to Jacob Fatu moonsaulting three separate times, destroying Braun Strowman. Oh, and then Braun tries to get back up, wind sprints around the corner, and we get a hip tack. It was everything I wanted, plus left enough heat for later. Jacob Fatu is everybody's favorite wrestler at this point, right?
Yes, Brad, and he's going to be your future WWE world champion at some point, because this dude is going to be either a must or heel, or when you decide to flip him babyface, he's going to be a hell of a babyface.
So is he getting the U.S. title as a stepping stone title before he gets into the world title scene?
See, that's a problem, because we just gave it back to L.A. Knight. Do you want to make L.A. Knight a traditional champion? I got to say, if this is your match for WrestleMania, I'm going with Jacob.
Oh, and I think the only way Jacob doesn't get it is if Jimmy's going to win the title. There is a storyline to be booked that Jimmy wins his first singles title while his brother wins the main event. And we get an Eddie and he, another one of the he shall not be named, hugging at the end of WrestleMania. You know, that other guy that doesn't exist anymore, from who was also a Canadian, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure Fando snapped him out of the system, so it doesn't really matter now.
He didn't get brought. He's going to be like the Iron Fist from the Netflix series. He's just not going to exist anymore. We're going to make a few comic book references, because we are going to get to comic books. So, Sean, this is when you can tell we're in the three-hour era, because recap number two. Hey, Jade, how are you? So Jade beatdown. Oh, and then commercial. Recap number three. We recap the same events. We just stretch it out another 20 seconds before we get a Jade promo. Sean is scared. Jade is not known for her promos.
Brad, she was better than Naomi and Bianca Belair was last week when they were having their little high school theater class in the middle of the ring, and they were just not hitting the right notes. This right here, until we saw Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez come in, was fine. She held her own. It was a short promo segment. It gave us the feeling that she's out for revenge, and that's all we need from Jade. Let's just have her have short little promos and get her in the ring for short matches.
Pre-tapes. And pre-tape covered all of those sins. Yeah, my son and I went to pick up WWE 2K. I bought it for my PlayStation. I wanted the disc rather than the download. And we saw two kids at the mall, because it's March break here. An African-Canadian gentleman found another African-Canadian gentleman at the mall. And he said, "Hey, man, what are you doing here? You owe me money." And he throws him to the ground and just starts wailing on him. cell phone comes out by one of the other kids in the mall. And it's like, dude, that was more believable than the segment we got with the two of them. Because at least it was, they were like, these guys were like yelling at each other. They were fighting. I don't believe any of these women, other than Jade, who is the most believable, actually don't like each other. And of course, Liv Morgan, which Liv Morgan and Jade next week, boy, oh boy, that there's no way that match is lasting more than 3 minutes without then the interference.
Oh yeah, I can already tell you, I'm pretty sure we're going to get some kind of interference in that match. That, you won't have a clean finish in that one.
No, because you need her to, you need something to happen with Naomi. I've heard other people talk about this. I'm going to plant this seed out here. You watch more wrestling than Greg does, and you watch a little bit of NXT. The metaphor, as in, or the meta two girls, I think they're ready to be added to Naomi's heel faction. I like, bring them now, bring them on.
Brad, I don't want to settle those two ladies with Naomi. I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay, Sean, so you and Greg both hate Naomi. I don't mind her. I think she's a decent wrestler with some clever moves. What is it about Naomi that drives you nuts?
Okay, so we're seeing her down this road to being a heel. They haven't changed her theme music. She isn't the most believable heelish kind of character yet. So Jezzet is being reserved on my part.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. She definitely needs some heaters. B-Fab promo. B-Fab cuts a decent promo in Spanish. I think it's good. And then she basically calls out Charlotte Flair. B-Fab versus Charlotte Flair, Sean. I was like, man, we're about to see how healed Charlotte is. Because if she can carry B-Fab to a good match, she's 100.
I got to say, Brad, this match was just maybe 5 minutes too long. 5 minutes too long.
Yeah, because while Charlotte's beating up B-Fab, it's fine. Once B-Fab goes on offense, she hits a couple of her kicks. She hits a jump kick, a sweep kick. But there's nothing special about B-Fab. And it's not that she's bad. She's just not good. And her selling is poor. She takes, when Charlotte ends up hitting the natural selection, she almost over-rotates the natural selection. Like she goes, rolls through it. And then we have the figure four into the figure eight. And yeah, just she didn't take the chops well. I just think she's average. I don't think there's anything wrong with B-Fab. I just don't think there's anything right about B-Fab either, if that makes any sense.
I just feel like her strength is going to be a mouthpiece for a tag team or a faction. Like she was used to be with the Street Profits. Why can't we keep her with the Street Profits and let her be the manager?
Because they're heels and she's not.
Okay, in this match, could you figure out who was a heel, who was a face?
I had a note for that too. It was like, I don't think it mattered because I think the crowd was going to cheer for the star and they knew what this was going to be. And what this was going to be was a fight because Tiffy, when Charlotte leaves B-Fab in the figure eight for too long, Tiffy comes out and attacks. It feels like a small army of extras are brought out to try and pull these women apart. And eventually Tiffy dives off the top rope to the row of extras and kaboom, Sean, everybody's down.
Finally, somebody was able to catch Tiffany when she does these moves. And I guarantee you now she's going back to management going like, hey, on this European tour, I want every single one of these guys with me when I want to do these spots.
Well, and the Spanish extras were excellent. So more to come. Actually, you know what? I'm going to just make an executive decision, Sean, because we do get a Drew McIntyre promo, and we can talk about that in a second. But essentially, Miz comes out to do Miz TV, and then this continues. This brawl rolls right back into the entranceway. There's another fight. Tiffy climbs on top of the small screens, which, by the way, I love these small screens because it means that you get the crowd behind them, and it just looks, it feels more intimate. And Tiffy drops off one of those screens and wiping out another round of extras.
True. And if you notice these extras, if you're a Progress Wrestling fan, your Progress World Champion, Luke Jacobs, is in this group. And his tag team partner, Ethan Allen, was in this group. So, David, you should check this out. Enjoy this little segment of your guys being on WWE TV.
Well, and today and yesterday were tryout days for WWE. So all the European wrestlers, many of them who were flown in for some tryouts, and some of them are doing undercard matches and enhancement work throughout the overseas tour. So good for those guys. And you called it. Nobody got dropped in this thing, and they protected the big stars well heading into some of the biggest matches of the year. Oh boy, Drew McIntyre has a conspiracy theory, and he's been focused on the wrong person all year because he was focused on Punk and he was focused on Rollins. But really, the person who was cashing in on all of his misery was Damian Priest. Damian Priest cashed in at WrestleMania. He cashed in at Clash at the Castle. He cashed in because Drew didn't get his money in the bank. He threw him out at the Rumble, and then he eliminated him from Elimination Chamber. And now Drew is focused specifically on Damian Priest. Is this okay for a WrestleMania match? Two former world champions, neither of them anywhere near the title picture, but two big dudes who are about to have a big match.
Well, I would have slid a extra little bonus over to Drew McIntyre because this promo got me into this freaking feud that's coming down the road. And I feel like he did the yeoman's work here to get us to care about this non-title feud of two former champions who are nowhere near the main event scene now.
Well, and here, let me make this very simple for you. You know what would make this feud make very simple sense? The winner of this feud becomes a number one contender after Mania to whatever show they get drafted to.
Exactly. That would be the perfect move.
And the best thing is whichever one wins. You have a long-term grudge that the loser can come back and cash in on, so you can have this feud heat up whenever you need it to. Plus, they can lose to whoever the new champion is going to be, because likely we're going to have Jey Uso winning one title and maybe John Cena on the other side. And so you match up the face and the heel dynamic correctly. Whoever wins the match has a match. They lose. They're the first loser on a title run, but it doesn't matter because they have a win at WrestleMania. I don't even know. This next segment, I don't know if there's anything to talk about other than the fact that Miz is Spanish is pretty good. He puts over Travis Scott and John Cena as great rappers. One of these two things is true, and the other one is the fact that that John Cena is a great rapper and Travis Scott's kind of trash. Yeah, I made a face at John. So Cody does his whole entrance. The crowd sings along. And then Cody basically drops Miz and says, "I don't want to talk to anybody but John Cena on Monday." This was perfect. I love this so much.
You know how last week Cody took us on a journey in his promo to explain that he's ticked off at one John Cena? This has been the promo last week. And this really does come out, him just lay out somebody like The Miz, who, by the way, broke the cardinal rule, thou shall not interrupt, sing along with Cody's theme, and he paid the price.
It was one of the highlights of our trip to Toronto, was getting to do the sing-alongs for all those songs. But the best part about this was that Miz loses nothing, and that Cody looks, it's like he got a phone call from Steve Austin this week saying, "Hey, brother, if you want to be over, you just need to drop people every once in a while." And he should. Like, there should be a time when John Cena is hiding behind security and we just start getting crossroad after crossroad after crossroads. Clear the way.
Exactly. You got all this European talent that you're bringing around to different shows as security. Just have Cody drop like six of them for crossroads as Cena's just cowering behind like maybe four more.
Okay, speaking of Europeans, we have Shinsuke Nakamura with Nick Aldis, one of the greatest exports from England. This run can't end until Nick Aldis is in a match. Like, we need the payoff to be that Nick Aldis takes off the suit and kicks some ass, right?
Yes, we need a WrestleMania moment for Nick Aldis. I don't care who you put him in the ring with. I got it. Put him in the ring with Austin Fury, because that way it could be a short match. Aldis could get all his moves in. 1, 2, 3, Aldis wins. And everybody's happy, and Fury can't just be Fury.
Oh yeah, he doesn't lose anything. Or he can beat The Miz, or there's like five other people he could beat. There's a bunch of those guys in that talent. So Shinsuke wants a rematch. Aldis, like, you're lucky that the referees likes you or doesn't want to push anything. Priest is standing there. He's pissed off. So we'll take these two angry dudes and make them fight. So Priest and Shinsuke are next. Oh, and by the way, here's another recap, because we're going to talk about John Cena. Thou shall not go for more than half an hour on WWE TV without putting out something about
Well, especially now since he's a heel and he's also buddy-buddy with the final boss.
Oh, he's everywhere. And he's the best part-timer in WWE history at this point. Sure. So the other thing we saw here was this red lighting and a luchador walking on the top rope. And then all of a sudden we see him sitting in the corner and it's very clearly Rey Fénix.
You know, as soon as I saw that, Greg, I actually went, I mean, Brad, man, see, I get so excited for this. I forget who I'm talking to. And I saw this and I just went onto the internet going like, is this Rey Fénix's introduction to WWE? Question mark.
If they're smart, I like the idea of putting Rey on one show and his brother on the other one, and then eventually having them pair up and have a tag run. But they need the singles run, right?
Yeah, they do. Especially Rey Fénix, because he's been away with an injury for so long. And you gotta wonder how many AEW fans are also WWE fans. So we need to introduce Rey Fénix to the larger WWE audience. Who is his Rey Fénix? Let him have some squash matches. Let him have like this run that Penta had so far. And WWE has done a hell of a job of Penta.
The only thing I would have said was, I know that they really wanted both of them on the main roster. I might have sent Fénix to NXT just because their main event scene is desperate for some more talent.
Especially on the men's side. The men's side needs a lot of help.
It needs a ton of help. And Rey Fénix instantly becomes one of your top guys. So I get it. They have Ricky Starks. They basically took three main eventers from AEW and said, hey, let's just drop them all into three different shows. Fine. Why is he wearing red, though? Isn't this the blue brand?
Maybe he didn't get the memo yet, and they decided to have this produce, so just in case they decide to throw on Raw after Mania, they have it already to go.
Works for me. So our next match is Shinsuke Nakamura versus Damian Priest. Story of this match is we have two very good strikers, one who is going to use power moves, the other one who's going to use more of the submission style. Damian Priest is in control basically until the commercial break. We even get this really cool flatliner off of a dive from Shinsuke Nakamura. Damian hits an amazing Falcon Arrow at one point and old school. But Shinsuke is rallying with some strikes and then even things like an armbar. There's a giant clothesline at one point knocking Shinsuke out of his boots. Shinsuke sold like $1 million. And then as we look like we're getting the end, Drew comes out, distracts him. Shinsuke takes advantage. We're going to get Kinshasa, but no, he's taken out. Damian's getting ready for South of Heaven. Drew McIntyre attacks, DQ. There's a brawl. Shinsuke hits the Kinshasa afterwards, and McIntyre beats him up, including with steel steps. I feel bad for Shinsuke because he's so talented, but the rumor is he's leaving WWE, which makes sense.
Yeah, I was reading the same rumors. Apparently, his contract ends at the end of this month, and I think both parties have decided not to re-up or anything, so maybe Shinsuke is going to take a trip back over to Japan to wrap up his career. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
If you told me he was going to New Japan, boy, oh boy, New Japan could use Shinsuke Nakamura right about now.
Okay, so I would have the same problem with him being in the main event scene in New Japan Pro Wrestling as the ace, Tanahashi. You're still not solving the problem that is New Japan Pro Wrestling, where they need younger talent to be moved up. And the rumor is they're going with Tanahashi to be the champion until 2026. So there's just booting things down the road. But hey, having him back in the company, that'd be kind of cool. Or he could go over Noah.
Yeah, or Noah. But even just putting him back into New Japan would freshen up their main event scene because it would give them another player. And if eventually, if you have Shinsuke come back as a face and then turn on one of those young guys, betray them. He comes back to mentor a couple of them, betrays them, wins the title. And then we eventually get one of the young lions climb up and get the win over him and become and let, you know, a true New Japan legend that made in WWE put over a young guy. Then there's some progress to be made there. And frankly, they don't have they have Godot who can still go, but they need that. And listen, I love Tanahashi, but I do not want to see Tanahashi wrestle anymore. It's just, it's like watching Matt Hardy wrestle. There's certain guys, it's like the door that's done. I don't need to watch you anymore. If I want to watch you wrestle, I'll watch old stuff.
I'm with you. I would have just rather President Ace be President Ace.
Or have his nostalgia run, Sean, and not be in the main event scene. If he was just having a year of goodbye matches and wrestling some of his favorite opponents and putting over some young guys on the way out, then nobody would be mad about this. Or if he turned, if he became a heel like John Cena did, there's something to be done with Tanahashi. It's just not what they're doing.
Okay, now, Greg, you're just wanting to... see, again, I'm getting too excited. I forgot who I'm talking to. Brad, my friend. You just want heel turns for heel turns. You guys are underneath this maple leaf idea that heel turn by John Cena was the greatest heel turn in the last 20 years. I'm here to tell you people, it was a heel turn for just being a heel turn. It doesn't make that much sense because the last time we saw John Cena and The Rock, they weren't really on the same page. And I just don't believe it. I'm like, I just rather see John Cena be babyface for this whole run and see you later. Hustle, loyalty, respect, man.
John Cena is going to get his own Fast and the Furious movie with The Rock. That's just how this is. Vin Diesel may not make up with him, but John Cena's plays Vin Diesel's brother. So those two guys can get together and we'll have another spinoff movie. It's fine. They need stuff to do. John Cena can become even richer with The Rock. Speaking of people who should be well off, Randy Orton, and he's going to wrestle Carmelo Hayes. Oh boy, Sean, this was a scene where it was like, these are two really smooth guys. And man, did I love this match. I mean, Hayes sold for most of this match. He does get his stuff and he is that springboard DDT. He ends up trying to hit nothing but net, avoids that, ends up hitting an amazing bouncing kind of DDT. Carmelo then tries another nothing but net. Randy catches them. They hit a superplex. Hayes misses a first 48, looks like he's going to eat another move, hits the first 48. Finally, Randy gets his DDT off the ropes. There's this crazy sequence at the end where he hits the first 48, and then Orton bounces up and grabs poor Carmelo Hayes for an RKO. And then afterwards, Randy goes to shake Carmelo's hand. He swats it away and then he eats another RKO. I love this match. The only thing I was expecting was for Carmelo doing all the bouncy things off the ropes. I was waiting for one of those to be caught with an RKO out of nowhere. But maybe they just didn't have time to rehearse that.
Maybe, because I was thinking when he was going for that springboard DDT, I'm like, oh, this is a moment that they're going to hit the RKO out of nowhere. Then Carmelo kind of act like he was going to go to the top rope and I'm going like, no, you haven't seen this horror movie before. If you go to the top rope of Randy Orton, you're going to eat a RKO.
No, he hit a pretty mundane one. The only thing I can think of is that they're saving that for a rematch. And this was kind of just a teaser. But the two of them are so smooth. It was a class for anybody who's learning how to wrestle. Watch this match. Here, we need another recap. It's been like 10 minutes. So Braun Strowman got destroyed by Jacob Fatu, and now Jacob Fatu's gotten a promo, and he won next week. Like, how many matches are these guys going to have? This is another series now where it just keeps going.
You know, with these two, I don't care. It's fun. It's violent. It's just everywhere you want to go. Just let these guys have a brawl all right around Italy. It'll be okay. It'll be fine. Sign me up.
Dude. You know what? Sign me up for this. When I saw Gunther coming out and we saw him in the back walking at the beginning, I was like, oh, we're getting a Gunther match? And then they said he was going to cut a promo. Boy, was I happy that he just didn't cut a promo. He makes fun of Spain, saying he wishes he was in Germany. Like, he's just taking the piss. And then he said, hey, you know, I'm going to beat up one of your local people. You know, I heard he was a kid a while ago. So send out Axiom. And I love that he called him a kid, because those of us who watched NXT UK, we know that underneath that mask is Spanish legend A-Kid, who is now just Axiom.
And I can't believe I'm going to say this. This was a great match with Gunther, and I was perfectly happy to see this match. And if you're lucky enough to still have access to NXT UK, you need to go back and check the archives, because I'm pretty sure they had a banger of a match on that episode of NXT UK. And this match right here was almost my favorite match of the night, if Carmelo Hayes and Randy Orton didn't have a match that was just a hair better than this one.
These back-to-back matches spoiled us for what wrestling could be. Because one was this incredible, like, legend versus young guy match. This was the overconfident champion getting taken to the limit by the local boy done good. It was incredible. Some of the stuff being like the strikes, you forget how good A-Kid is at strikes. Gunther, but anytime you got the offense, Gunther would just whoosh, chop him and knock him down. There's a part where he goes to hit the golden ratio and he gets missed and he gets powered by Gunther. One, two, and Axiom's out. And I'm at that point, I'm like, oh, this match has just gotten from, you know, traditional SmackDown squash to this is going to be good. Axiom rallies. He ends up climbing top rope, hitting a drop kick. He ends up, there's a sequence where Gunther's sitting on top rope and it looks like we're going to need a superplex. And then Axiom tries for his Spanish fly. We don't get that, but he does hit. He goes for his Hurricane Rana. Gunther catches him, picks up like he's going to give him a superpower bomb. And then as he goes back down, it turns into the Hurricane Rana. Just a great little sequence. We get a golden ratio. That only gets two. And then eventually Rana is countered into a power bomb. One, two, three. I absolutely love this. With a Gunther hits his that big power bomb at the end and then chokes out Axiom for good measure. Sean, there was all kinds of little spots in this match. I didn't do it justice. This is probably, I know you said that you went the other direction. I think I'd like this match better just because this is great European wrestling in a city in Europe.
Okay, look, I'm going to put my personal feelings for Gunther to the side. And I got to say, this match was great. And he did A-Kid /SM a great service by making sure he looked good in front of his home crowd. And we still keep the heat on Gunther as he chokes out SM /A-Kid at the end. But still, I'm not going to tell Randy Orton he didn't have the best match of the night, because I'm not going to get RK out of nowhere.
It's like you're just sitting here. Also, if you want something fun to watch this week, go back and watch the Randy Orton. There's a compilation exists of home video where his kids are RKOing him, which is just hilarious. It's a family affair. Hey, another recap. Tune in and listen to the Raw Dogs as they'll recap what happens on Monday Night Raw every week here on the Hub. Sean, they covered the fact that Roman Reigns came back and destroyed Seth and CM Punk, pretty much guaranteeing our three. Like, as soon as, if anybody who didn't think that three-way was coming, it's coming.
Oh, if you don't see it now, a blind Stevie Wonder tied up in a basement blindfolded would see this.
And then before we get to Paul Heyman, this is the point in the show we get some smoke and some stuff and a four. What is that?
You know, I've been trying to bat my mind about this for the last 2 hours since that went off the air. I get a sneaky feeling that this is going to somehow tie into the Wyatt Six somehow. And I don't know, unless it's a debut of maybe, I don't know.
There's four guys running around in masks down at NXT, but I don't see them bypassing because they're all guys.
That'd be awful.
No, and maybe there's going to combine a couple people and make a foursome. I don't know. But it's the only other foursome that I can think of is the Metaphor, who are due, if they're not leaving NXT soon. Like, I hope that they're leaving NXT, because I don't want to see all four of those guys and gals get released.
Me either, but they already been debuted on the main roster in a way, so I don't think that might be them either. We're going to have to stay tuned here if you're just one out.
Yeah, it's a good time of year for them to hint people. And you know what? We don't need to see, maybe we can see Ray Phoenix before WrestleMania, but I don't think we need any more debuts for a while other than maybe Phoenix, and only because Tony Khan was a dick and didn't let him out before Royal Rumble.
Exactly, because Tony had to be a crybaby for a couple of minutes and keep the guy a bit longer than he should have. Oh, hey, I just got thinking about it. There's rumors that Jeff Cobb might be signing with the WWE. Could it be Jeff Cobb?
As a four.
as one of four.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, and does he end up in the middle of a Samoan mess? Because there seems to be rules in WWE. If you're Latino, you have to fight other Latinos. If you're Samoan, eventually you have to fight all the other Samoans.
Or you kick Solo to the curb, let Jacob Fatu be the leader of the Tongas and Jeff Cobb, and let this foursome just run amok in WWE.
You can just send Solo back to NXT. He could. They need a main event guy, and Solo needs work.
Well, after the damage they've done in this run leading up to WrestleMania with Solo, he needs a rehab ASAP.
And maybe he should go over to New Japan. Like, maybe when they send Shinsuke back over, they can send Solo as his muscle.
You know, that could work.
That actually could work. I'm not even being funny. Yeah. There's stranger things that could have happened. So Paul Heyman cuts a promo. He wants to remind people that this is a day to celebrate Roman Reigns because the game is out today with his face on it. You can wait until SmackDown's over to start playing your video games because especially we like high ratings, especially during my segment. And you're going to find out more on Monday or next Friday what's going to happen here. And the crowd starts to boo and he's like, it's just a cheap flight to Italy. If you want to hear more about Roman Reigns, you can do that. I'm like, the crowd has been so obedient the whole night. And Paul Heyman says, you have to go to Italy to see Roman Reigns. And they turn.
You know, he's a master at crowd manipulation because when he came out, he was beloved by the crowd. And the moment he suggested, oh, hey, spend some more money, take that quick little trip to Italy, it'll be fine. They just want to boo the guy out of the building.
So this was fine. This was another great segment. Sean, we head into the main event segment with Legato. And Legato is there interrupting the Street Profits. They basically are calling them out. They hope that they win and they want next. Sure. The other segment we get before the main event is Jimmy sitting in the back with Gunther. And Gunther says, you know, we have a lot in common. I have a younger brother. You have a younger brother. I mean, I know you're twins, but let's be honest. You're definitely the more mature one. And I choked out that kid today. And I'm warning you that I'm going to choke out your brother. Take care of him. And then Jimmy said, you know what? I think you're about to drop a rank and drop a title. Gunther tried to warn him, Sean. Is that actually what we're getting? Drop a rank and drop a title?
Well, if I was booking WrestleMania, that would be the case. And he would be about all the way down to private Gunther, but that's not going to be the case. I got a feeling that we're going to see Jimmy Uso versus Gunther here before Mania. And if I was Jimmy, I'd be kind of worried because he might not make it to WrestleMania.
Oh, I think I think he might be a casualty of Gunther one of these days. There's a lot of these feuds that are simmering with backstage attacks and attacks after matches, and they need to tweak one of them. Something needs to change at one of them. And I have if they don't need Jimmy for to win a title at WrestleMania, I don't like what's going to happen to him. He is totally expendable.
Yeah, he would be one person that you can push off the little life raft if he needed to, just save some food or something like that. And you're just like, sorry, Jimmy.
Goodbye, Jimmy. Speaking of expendable, our main event tonight is the Street Profits versus DIY. This was the other match I noted. Who is the heel in this match?
That's what I was getting at when I saw this start. I'm going like, okay, so the Street Profits came back. They attacked both pretty deadly. They attacked the Mercy Machine Guns. They kind of have more of an edge to them. So they're kind of heelish. And DIY are certainly heels the way they got the titles. So we got a heel versus heel main event, but it was good. I enjoyed this match.
It was really good. And it's hard to boo the Street Profits when the other team is a heel because their offense is so flashy. It's fan friendly. I mean, you get things like Tommaso Ciampa, Dawkins attacking Johnny on the outside. I love when Johnny tries his slingshot and Dawkins just catches him and just flips him. I mean, we ended up having Ford isolated in the ring during the commercial break. Dawkins gets the hot tag. And then you forget how good Dawkins is because Ford is super flashy. But Dawkins, his back elbow, his flapjack, his spinning splash, he's got all the energy. And this is where they the match just picks up. We get a 450 by Ford into the knees. We end up having a shatter machine hit, and Dawkins breaks that one up. We have there is a doomsday device done by the Street Profits, but they actually do this weird thing where there's an attack from the outside. Johnny gets flipped backwards. He then gets thrown onto his face, and we then get the doomsday device. There's a breakup there. We have a super kick into a fairy tale ending that only ends up being two. There's just all kinds of stuff going on with these guys. They are flying through this match. At the end of this match, we end up having some dives. DIY sets up for a meet in the middle. Johnny kicks Ciampa instead. And then we have a sky high into from the heavens. One, two, and instead of Ciampa getting there in time, you actually have the tag partner block the interference. Three. I love that ending because we had two or three times where the illegal partner blocks the finish. It made sense, Sean. It was perfect. And the Street Profits have ended a 2.5-year drought of not being world title champions.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago on the main show where Donnie was saying how Dawkins was the actual star of the tag team? This match made me a believer in Dawkins and his hot tag and what led from the hot tag to the finish. This dude can be a main eventer as well as Montez Ford. And I'm like, hey, you know what? Donnie was right.
Oh my gosh. The check's in the mail. Don't worry. Donnie was right. But he is right. When it comes to, I think that the better wrestler is Dawkins out of the two. He has the extra size. If he cuts down, just gets his body into more of a main event shape, even as lean as, it's not like Damian Priest has got abs or anything. He looks great, but he doesn't look like a bodybuilder. And that's all we need, Sean, is we need that kind of stuff. But this sets up a chaotic piece for this tag team because Legado is still in the mix. DIY needs a rematch. Oh, and Motor City Machine Guns are just circling around somewhere. Plus, Pretty Deadly is going to get their match next week for the titles.
And see, when they say next week for the titles, I'm going, guys, I'm sorry. No. Because we know that they're not going to be a one-week champions, and Pretty Deadly are going to have a great match. They're going to be the cannon fodder for the new tag team champions in the Street Profits. So, Elton Prince, you're a good man, sir. Maybe next time you could be tag team champions.
Or maybe they won't lose clean, and this will just set up these five teams are going to be in one match at WrestleMania.
If NXT doesn't have a ladder match for a title, let's just slide it over to this tag team group on SmackDown and let them have the ladder match for the title. That'd be kind of crazy.
Or something, you could do something. The other clever thing with these guys could be some sort of elimination match.
True. You could do an elimination match. That'd be kind of interesting as well. I like the idea, Brad.
They have to do something to keep these guys moving. All right, Sean, before we go into our Daredevil review, let's take a quick recap of the show and let's move to the synopsis.
This is your SmackDown synopsis.
Let's go back through this episode of the SmackDown that was. Let's begin. Do you ever keep the walking stuff? Would you keep or cut that?
I want to cut it because there's some stuff that we're going to keep in this episode. I'm going to cut this so I can actually keep some more stuff down the road.
Okay, what do you want to do with LA Knight, his promo, before we get to the match?
We are going to superstar this sucker so we can get to this match because all this promo is doing is leading to said match.
Jacob Fatu, Tama Tonga, and Solo Sikoa versus LA Knight, Jimmy and Braun Strowman.
Oh, we're keeping this match because it leads us to next week where we get Braun Strowman versus Jacob Fatu, and we get to see the great hot tag of Braun Strowman and he running wild. And we saw Jacob Fatu just go to town at the end of this match. It's a win. We're keeping it.
This is Jade's promo.
Okay, so I'm going to cut this right after we get Jade talking and before we see Raquel Rodriguez and Liv Morgan come in there to kind of mess this up because she was in a good flow. It would make Jade look better. So we're keeping the first half.
Okay. So we are now BFAB's promo.
We're going to cut it because we'll save a little bit of the match, but I'm going to cut this promo.
Oh, this and the match? I know what you're doing with this one. Go ahead and say it, Sean.
We're going to make this like a WWE.com exclusive until we get to Tiffany Stratton, and we'll have Tiffany coming down and attack Charlotte, and that's what you get to see on TV.
Tiffy time!
Yeah, because we didn't need anything other than the Tiffy stuff. Drew McIntyre explaining his feud with Damian Priest.
Oh, we're keeping this because this was a masterpiece, and Drew McIntyre did so much work here to make me care about this match.
Yeah. Okay, we are now nearing the Miz getting dropped by Cody.
You know, let's cut him getting dropped by Cody and just have Cody just cut the little promo saying, Cena, I'll see you in Brussels Monday.
Oh. It was a yeah. It needed half of that stuff. We're now gone through Miz, so we're now into... All right, I'm going to make this difficult. Shinsuke Nakamura, the piece in the back with Damian Priest and Nick Aldis and the match. It's all one piece. Either you keep it all or you cut it all.
Okay, we're going to cut it.
Yeah, this was just an excuse to have a beatdown at the end. Oh, I know what you're doing. Carmelo Hayes and Randy Orton.
Oh, we're keeping this. This was my match of the night. We're keeping it.
Yeah. And then, of course, we're going to Axiom versus Gunther.
Okay, so mark this down. Circle this day because I'm keeping the Gunther match. Because it was so good. Yeah.
I think we all love Gunther tonight. Paul Heyman promo.
I want to cut it because I really don't need it.
Finally. Okay, Jimmy and Gunther in the back. I almost forgot about that.
I think we keep it because it goes well with the match with A-Kid and Gunther from before, and it leads up to a possible Jimmy versus Gunther match before we get to WrestleMania.
And Legado and the Street Profits.
I'm sorry for Legado, but we don't need this.
Okay, and then finally, let's end with our main event, Street Profits and DIY with the title change.
We're keeping this because, I mean, there's three great matches on this episode of SmackDown last night. You need to go back and watch this episode of SmackDown if you didn't watch it.
Acknowledge me.
Question is, did we... I think we just enjoyed this. I think overall, this was the best episode of SmackDown in a while. And yeah, it hasn't even aired. Well, I might have this podcast up before the episode of SmackDown airs on US broadcasters. But the good news about this is if you've been following on Twitter or over someplace like that, you know this was the best episode of the year. I think Greg needs to go away more often because whenever he's away, the show is better.
Well, you know, because I'm here, my power stunning influences the world. So yes, Greg, just stay away just a little bit longer here.
Okay, I didn't have any music queued up, but in post, you're going to hear the Daredevil theme as we queue up Daredevil Born Again.
So, my friend, have you seen the news edition of Daredevil, the latest one from DC Plus? I got to say, I was worried about this being as good as what they had during the Netflix run. And the first 3 minutes of the opening act of the first scene of the first episode, it made me mad. It made me cry. It hurt me. And this thing is damn good.
So what do you think the story behind all of this is when it came to the rewrites? Like what happened there?
I'm wondering if the actor that plays Foggy and the actor that plays the first love interest of Daredevil had like prior projects that they couldn't get out of. So they had to kind of write them out in the first couple of episodes. And that's what we got.
Yeah. So I do know that both, Eldon Henson, who plays Fog, who plays Foggy, and Deborah Ann Wolfe have other commitments that they're dealing with. And in the comic books, it's actually Karen Page who it's Daredevil who moves away, and Karen Page knows Daredevil's secret identity as Matt Murdock. And she ends up moving. She ends up getting into like drugs and porn, and she just becomes a failed actress. And she, through her addiction, ends up revealing to somebody that Daredevil is Matt Murdock, selling that to the Kingpin. She ends up getting killed in the crossfire. So that's a whole totally different storyline. And it's not Foggy that dies. It's Karen. So I didn't, when Foggy died at the beginning, I was like, holy cow. Although it's Marvel. Like, it's not like somebody does it. The only person that stays dead is Uncle Ben. Everybody else comes back.
So true. So true. And I love the fact that you see Bullseye there at the end of the first episode. And we see Matt Murdock at the point that line that you should never cross, and he crosses it, and it leads into the rest of the next two episodes where he's dealing with this.
Well, and there's this beautiful dichotomy that's going on where it throughout these two episodes, we're seeing Matt Murdock has moved away from being the vigilante. And I love the fact that they pick up the old stuff. So Daredevil, his secret identity is blown. Vincent D'Onofrio, who plays the Kingpin, like the best Kingpin that has ever existed in any iteration of this. He knows that he is, that Matt Murdock is Daredevil, and Daredevil doesn't exist anymore because, as you said, when his friend dies, that whole scene where he's listening to Foggy's die, and then he just snaps and throws him right off the roof.
Yeah, like you go back to the Netflix series where he literally, there's a whole season of Daredevil talking with the Punisher, going like, "There's a line. Superheroes do not cross this line," and we finally see Murdock snap. And who wouldn't snap here? Because that's your lifelong friend. And I would have kicked the dude off the roof too. Like,
but the Catholic guilt plays into this piece where he is just dying, drowning in Catholic guilt. This idea that I crossed the line, I've been so hard on Frank Castle, and here I am, I have broken that peace. And the only person that could break him was Wilson Bethanol's Bullseye. And I love the fact he doesn't even kill Bullseye. Stupid Bullseye's still alive.
I know. That was the shock of the first episode. It's like, oh, he's still moving. Like, dude, is he superhuman?
Well, remember, during the last episode of the other series, the last time we see Bullseye, he's getting operated on, and they're putting something into his spine. In the comic books, he has like an animantium, like similar Wolverine, except it's just his spinal column. So it's enhanced. His body is a little bit enhanced so that he can take the punishment that Daredevil can dish out. But just the wounds Daredevil takes. And then Daredevil's like, you know what? I'm going to be happy. But the part where they finally re-meet Sean and they're in the dining room and the two of them are just like, this is the most awkward date I have ever seen. Daredevil and Kingpin just hanging out.
This was the greatest cinematic moment in the history of Marvel. This little like interaction where you have both of them laying out their fresh to each other, going like, "Yeah, I hope you're a changed person, but if you step out of line, I'm going to be here." And Kingpin reverts goes like, "If you go back to your old ways, there's going to be consequences." And it was great.
Yes. And then there's even references when the Kingpin becomes mayor. He's talking about, you know, we don't need people gun-toting vigilantes or wall-crawling menaces, hinting to both Spider-Man and Punisher all in the same series, same piece.
Exactly. And that leads us to the last moment of the third episode that we saw.
Oh, wait, hold on. I want to pick up on a couple of Easter eggs. So, because you got into the nerdiness. So, at the beginning of the first episode, did you catch the spray paint? The fact that they're drawing a picture of Wilson Fisk with the two faces and the guys all in white. Did you catch that scene?
I didn't catch that.
So that is going to lead us to the villain for this series. So we can talk about that near the end, but I want you to keep that in mind that as you're watching the next couple of episodes, we keep seeing murals of Kingpin around the city. That is our main villain is coming, and he's one of my favorite Daredevil villains. He's a new creation. I don't know what they're going to do with him because his powers are unique and he's an Inhuman in the comic books. I don't think we're getting Inhuman anymore. I think Inhumans are gone. That series has failed. I think he'll be a mutant in this new version. But yeah, you're right. Matt Murdock ends up having to defend White Tiger. So are you familiar with White Tiger before this?
No, I wasn't. So White Tiger is a totally new character to me.
So White Tiger is a 1970s creation. He is in the same land as, the same kind of idea of as Danny Rand and a few of the other Kung Fu characters. His amulet gives him the power of the White Tiger. It's a curse / superpowers. He has enhanced speed, strength, and stamina. A little bit of martial arts training. He is an urban hero. And the amulet is passed down from one generation to the next. You have to be of a certain bloodline in order to use the amulet. So the whole thing where he's defending him. And I love the twist, Sean, where it's like Matt Murdock has to reveal. First, he tries to hide the White Tiger, and then he has to reveal the White Tiger because it proves that he's not a cop killer. That he is this good guy who's just a vigilante. And a part of me is like, is Matt Murdock trying to convince Sean? Was he trying to convince the jury that vigilantes are good? Or was he trying to convince himself that there's a reason to be a vigilante?
I really feel it's the latter. I feel like he was trying to convince himself that it's okay for him to go back to being Daredevil. But in this move, this was a really deep move because he outs the White Tiger. And it leads to something at the end of this episode. And I'm going like, it's going to be more guilt for Matt Murdock.
Oh, good old fashioned Catholic guilt. And then when Matt gets beat up at the end of, I think it's episode 1, you can see one of the cops is wearing a tattoo on his arm and it's a Punisher tattoo, which is very common with police officers. A lot of them will wear a version of the skull that Punisher wears. But there is a big hint that we're getting a lot of Punisher in this series.
Yeah, a lot of Punisher. And I can't wait to see this interaction with the Punisher and Matt Murdock. So it should be interesting. I gotta say, the scene where Matt Murdock takes on the two cops in the apartment of the witness was so great. And the fact that he was going like, guys, you don't want to do this. And then you finally see just a little bit of his blood being spilt on the floor. And he just snaps back in Daredevil mode and just whip these two guys.
And the music starts. Like you could just hear we see the blood react and then we hear the score from the old Daredevil show. And he becomes Daredevil for like a split second. And he kills the cops.
He overrains them.
This was no take no prisoners that. I mean, and throughout this whole thing, we also have BB Yurch, which is the reporter's daughter who's like who Kingpin killed like 3 seasons ago, but we're not going to mention that the Kingpin did that. And I love the Kingpin loses his mind that a vigilante gets off. And yeah, the closing of episode 3. Oh my gosh. You were about to get to it earlier. We've kind of talked about everything else. Let's go with wild theories because this end of this episode is insane.
Okay, so my theory about this ending is it's not the Punisher. It's somebody that fits hard to act like the Punisher. And we're going to see some video of the allegedly Punisher taking out the White Tiger.
Yes, and of course, the poor actor that plays the White Tiger passed away back in December of 2024, or just 2023. So they had filmed all this, and he is not with us anymore. So he hasn't seen this ending. It works okay because the character's dead anyways. And in the comic books, the same thing happens. The White Tiger dies, and it ends up being passed to, like, I think it's a daughter first, who's very evil, and eventually ends up in the hands of the niece, who is the current White Tiger in Marvel continuity, and is an excellent character. But during the Fisk celebration, when he becomes mayor, we also saw an advertisement for the bar that Luke Cage is running. And there's already been hints that in this show, we're going to get Jessica Jones. So if we can get Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and an Asian version, because in the comic books, Danny Rand has lost the dragon Iron Fist powers. They can have that that actor got hit by a bus and we'll just move on. Any other actor can play Iron Fist at this point.
Yes, anybody can be better than Danny Rand because the only thing we know about Danny Rand is he's the Iron Fist.
Well, and you know what? If the actor actually could fight, we'd be fine. So the other thing that's coming up, and I don't want to spoil too much for you, Sean, but the actor that's coming up in the future is we are going to get Muse, who is the painter. Like we've started to see all these murals kind of in the background of things. Do you know, you're not a comic book guy, so you don't know anything about Muse.
Nope, not a thing.
Okay, so I won't spoil too much with it. I will just say that Muse... in Marvel Comics is a new creation, which is kind of the run we're getting right now, is this run where Muse from Marvel Comics was a character that ended up being, he was an Inhuman from the 616 universe. He started appearing, I'm just looking up the comic, his comic book history. He started appearing around Daredevil 600. He is a sociopath who kills people. And traditionally uses blood as his art. So his power is that he can manipulate blood into and move it so that he can move. And usually he does it with dead victims and creates art out of their dead bodies. And that is the villain for this series.
Wow. That's going to be interesting. Now, this does have a MA-17 rating on Disney Plus, though, so they can probably get away with it.
Yeah. And so this is, yeah. So this became, he became, he's in the run that was, he ends up coming from the Charles Soule, Ron Gennari, run around issue 600 of in 2018. So this is all, new, fairly new material. And this is going to be this whole, that whole series was based around the fact that, you know, Matt Murdock had crossed the line. And he ended up in jail at one point in the comic book run. And so this is him kind of his redemption arc. And one of the reasons he part of this was that drove him nuts was Muse, because Muse was so vicious. And Wilson Fisk was running a very anti, he was the mayor. He didn't like vigilantes. There was a very hard line against vigilantes, and part of that was because of the stuff Muse was doing. He branded Muse as a vigilante because Muse was arguing that he was doing all of this stuff because he was fighting corruption at City Hall, and he was fighting. So there's, if all of this stuff culminates, it's like they're taking aspects of our what we've seen so far in the Daredevil, and they're combining it with some of the best story arcs from the comic books. And yeah, I have no, but in the comic books, Karen Page is dead and Foggy's alive, so they have. Also, for those of us comic book nerds, they have totally supplanted all of our expectations. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen.
It's going to be, I just feel like it's going to be a great run. And before we get done with this Daredevil talk, I love the fact that they kept the feel of the theme, and you get a little sadness in the violins and the strings, but it still has that powerful hope of brass and horns, and it just gets you back into that Netflix Daredevil theme, and it's so good.
What do you think about the opening? Like, they've definitely retooled it. What do you think the idea of the whole everything crumbling, and then we're starting to see the resurrection of the Daredevil statue, for lack of a better term?
You know, it fits the theme of this series, because we see Matt Murdock fell in the first episode. We see him fall to pieces, and slowly but surely, as we go through this arc, we're going to get our hero back. He's going to rebuild himself stronger. And I feel like that's how we're going to end this.
So Daredevil Born Again is scheduled to be a 9-episode run on Disney Plus, as I've been looking it up. And yeah, I hope this leads to, I mean, my dream crossover. The only thing that's left is the best crossovers in the comic books are Daredevil, Punisher, and Spider-Man. So if we can somehow get a Spider-Man in this at some point, I'll be all set. Ironically enough, he remembers Matt Murdock, the lawyer, but Matt Murdock doesn't remember him because of all the Spider-Man time travel, I don't remember it and nobody has any memory of me stuff. So I'm very excited. Is there anything that you're looking forward to just from what you've seen and what you've kind of has been hinted to? Like, what do you think who is the character you're most happy that has come back from the original run? Besides obviously Punisher, I mean, obviously Daredevil and Kingpin, because I don't think you could do this show without both those guys.
I can say the actress that plays Fitz's wife. I mean, she's good too. And this like kind of interaction they're having right now where they're having issues because she, while Fitz was away trying to get on the mints after getting his butt handed to him by Matt Murdock, was running the business. And once he got back up on his feet, he's going like, I'm going to be the mayor of New York. So I'm going to try to keep myself clean from the business. And she's like looking at him like going, huh?
Yeah, how are you the corrupt one? Am I you're the clean one and I'm the corrupt one? Well, I mean, he did get, you know, there is this whole thing where he gets shot and then he has Echo use her superpowers to remove something from him and do some sort of weird superpowery thing with the ancient spirits. And yeah, my only interest is, are we going to get any other like street level characters? Like we know we're getting Punisher. Are we, and we think Jessica Jones is in this. Do we get, well, would you want another Luke? Would you want Luke Cage in this? And if he does come back, would you like to have more Luke Cage in this version?
Yes, please. And sign me up. Yes. Let's have some more Luke Cage and let's have a Luke Cage series.
And let's use some of these other characters. You can combine people like Jessica Jones in the comic books. Jessica Jones and Luke Cage get married and have a kid.
Oh my God.
I know. And that's all I want out of this because I want them to get married. They eventually, there's a run in the comic books where we're setting it up, Sean. So there's a team where you get Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Spider-Man, Daredevil, Wolverine, and Bucky, who is a Cap at the time. So you could sub him for Sam. And that's your Avengers roster.
You know what? That sounds great. Let's go
with the Red Hulk as one of their heavy hitters. Like done. That's it. Done. Yeah. Send me that team right now. And the best part is anybody who's like, this is really woke Marvel. No, you know what? This is from the comic books. It's like there are people who didn't like Captain America. I'm sorry. I loved it because A, we got Red Hulk. B, it's from the comics. Steve loses his powers and we get Falcon. We get Bucky and Falcon, who both have been Captain America. It's fine. The characters can change.
And the fact that in the last movie where we saw Captain America, Steve Rogers, he literally hands the shield over to Falcon. He's passing the torch.
And it adds to, it's not, he didn't become Captain America because he's black. He became Captain America because that's what happens in the comics. Because he's been his sidekick since the 70s.
Because Steve found him worthy. He's a man of honor. He should be freaking Captain America.
And he doesn't have powers, yet he's still a badass.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. It's the other thing I love about Daredevil. Like, functionally, he doesn't have... He has some echolocation, but the rest of this is just badass. He's just a badass.
Yes, he's just like in that Batman vein where... They don't need superpowers. They're superpowers that are mine and their enhanced ability of their senses.
Also, Batman has one other superpower, though. He's rich.
Oh, it never hurts.
It never hurts. And he's got American money, not Canadian money. That's why he's rich. Sean, this has been a pleasure. We should check back in. I would say maybe in 3 weeks we get, even if it's not on a Friday, we should check in for after the next three episodes of Daredevil, because I love talking about this and I'm dying to hear your reaction because I know Muse is coming. I've seen it in the trailers. I want to see what you say. And I'm dying to see what they're going to do with him because he's not going to be an Inhuman. Inhumans do not exist. Just so you're clear, Fox had the mutant rights. So any mutants that were created by Marvel would then become Fox characters. So they didn't want to do that. So they created Muse in a way that they could use him as an Inhuman villain. So they could use him in that series if they needed him. So I'm not sure. It's like Miss Marvel is not is a mutant in the MCU. So maybe he'll be a mutant. And I'm dying to see what his powers look like on screen. He's the creepiest villain in Marvel in the last 20 years, and I can't wait.
Well, we'll have to find us a date, and we'll do a Daredevil like side podcast.
The Daredevil Appreciation Club has begun. And I have a funny feeling there might be a few other people. It's not a well-known thing, but Randy is also a giant comic book nerd and a giant Marvel watcher. So I have a funny feeling there might be run-ins if we continue this discussion. But speaking of run-ins, you've run in from a whole different podcast network to join me for tonight. Plug away, Sean.
Okay, so after you listen to this lovely edition of the Spectators podcast here on the Huge Hub Network, slide over to All Elite Radio on YouTube. Me and Ashley just covered AEW Revolution. It was a 8 out of 10 show. 95% good from AEW with a questionable main event. Go watch our video. You'll understand why. And we should have an episode out on Sunday. Catch you up in the week at All Elite Wrestling. Because I know the Huge Hub Network doesn't have a AEW show. So if you want to talk to the powers that be and you want an AEW show, I may have a prize. You never know.
Everybody has a prize for them, according to the Million Dollar Man. But also, you were right. What a great, like, you guys did a great show. That was a great PLE. Other than if somebody could tell Tony Khan, I don't care. I just want, give me 3 hours. Once you get beyond 3 hours, I stop paying attention. And you guys were 100% right. It wasn't that the main event was bad. It just was not the right match to be the main event on a show with way better main events.
Especially when you came off a run of 3 hot matches in a row and you decided to have your AEW World title be the main event. Normally, it would be a great match, but it couldn't live up to what it was before.
It was the most WCW thing they've done in a very long time. And this is a roster that used to have Sting on it.
Oh, hey, the Sting one was great. They did Sting right.
Oh, no. I'm just saying from the fact that this reminded me of, like, I remember watching old WCW PBVs.
This reminds you of 1997 Starrcade, where we had a year and a half of Sting build. And one night Hogan goes like, that doesn't work for me, brother.
Oh, it reminded me of watching the Cruiserweights and then your U.S. title scene. And they were all amazing matches. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, time to put Hogan and Piper in the main event. Great.
You know, like we were talking before, if you're rich, you got a little more power, unfortunately.
Your superpower is that your daddy lets you run your own wrestling show. Okay, before this becomes the AEW Burial Podcast, thank you for joining me, Sean. And thank you. Check out all the shows here on the Hub. Next up in sequence should be Storytime with Jimmy. You should get one heck of a story. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the Raw Dogs. And then, of course, the main show. I know we have a couple of very good interviews in the can. And Sean, I will hint that we have a very controversial issue coming up with one of the most controversial people in wrestling. So I can't wait for that one. And we already had PCO on, so it's not him.
Well, you know, you also had Eric Bischoff on before, so it's not him either. So who does that leave?
Well, smart wrestling fans will find out in the near future about who that is. So in the meantime, in between time, check out all the other podcast shows. If you want your AEW coverage, go check out All Elite Wrestling, All Elite Wrestling, All Elite Radio. All Elite Wrestling is where you watch the show. All Elite Radio is where you hear them break down the good and the bad of AEW. And you're doing God's work because, wow, especially Collision. I'm sorry.
Oh, come on. Collision is the best show. It is out of the two. It's the best show.
Okay. Well, for hot takes like that, go check out Sean's work. And we'll see you next week. We the ones.